理课堂听 class.com。
Majors, 1999, Grade 8, Paper 1, Part 1, Listening Comprehension. In sections A, B, and C, you will hear everything once only. Listen carefully and then answer the questions that follow. Section A, Talk. Questions 1 to 5 refer to the talk in this section. At the end of the talk,You will be given 15 seconds to answer each of the following 5 questions. Now, listen to the talk. As we all know, when machines work, they give off a lot of noise, and the noise can sometimes be very unpleasant or annoying. As a result, people have been trying to find ways to reduce noise. Although it may sound a little bit strange to you all, one of the best ways to make machines quieter, in cars, for example,may be to make them noisier. The source of this paradox is electronic anti-noise, which creates sound waves to cancel out unwanted noise, such as rattles, blares, etc. Now, although the idea dates back to the 1930s, it's only recently that the advances in computer technology have made anti-noise a commercial possibility. Take France, for example. Here,Industry spends a fortune to get rid of noise. We all know how unpleasant it is for people working in factories and ordinary people at home enjoying their leisure can be affected by noise. Delicate machines are affected by noise as well. The government has passed a lot of regulations concerning acceptable levels of noise. Noise is costly to industry. In the first place, just following a single regulation can cost $1 to $2 billion US in the textile industry, they say. Then secondly, of course, vibration can cause damage to machinery. Even very small vibrations can cause parts to wear out and equipment to fail. And naturally enough, this gets on to the price of the product. About 5 to 15% of the price of a product comes from noise and vibration cost, as estimated.At present, methods used to dampen down noise and vibration rely on techniques that are 30 or 40 years old. They usually involve wrapping the noisy or vibrating component in anything from cotton to concrete. But it is often expensive and inefficient. The modern electronic anti-noise devices don't reduce sound. Instead, sound is used to attack sound.The trick is to hit this sound wave with other waves in a carefully controlled way. It may not be possible to eliminate the noise completely, but engineers can build systems to eliminate specific kinds of noise and vibration. The new systems deal with repetitive noise. This unfortunately means that there is not much that can be done about one of the noise, like someone trying to learn to play trumpet, but they can handle fairly regular things like engine noise.A French company has developed a technique which uses microphones and the microprocessor. Processor measures the sound and directs the speaker to broadcast sound waves that are out of phase with the engine noise. The company claimed that it would make the car engine quieter, if not completely 100% silent. There are a number of other areas of application in the noisy industrial environment of today. One system which the company is developingis to minimize the noise of aircraft engines and helicopter vibrations. Now, anti-noise systems will be able to reduce noise in a cabin of an airplane to more acceptable levels. Another area which affects ordinary household nowadays concerns the noise which electricity and gas fires create. The electricity companies spend a lot of money each year cutting the harm of transformers, trying to quiet the noise and maintaining the equipment that is constantly affected by vibrations.If they can get rid of or even stop the vibrations, manufacturers can increase the production speed. But, of course, people working in noisy workplaces are perhaps more affected than anything by the effects of noise. Anti-noise can also create zones that are quiet in noisy workplaces. To create such a zone, you do 2 things. First, microphones are suspended around the workplace. Then,Speakers that produce out-of-phase sound waves can then be put closer to the worker under the desk or the machine. A company working in this area has tested this system and said that the car's noise level is low enough for somebody inside the zone to hear a conversation from another part of the workplace. Yet this is only one way. Shouts from a quiet zone could not be heard over the factory noise by those outside it, because the rest of the workplace remains noisy. This is one of the anti-noise measures experimented with today. If this proves to be feasible in many workplaces, I'm sure it can contribute to the reduction of noise in factory workshops in the future.
Section B, Interview. Questions 6 to 10 are based on an interview. At the end of the interview, you will be given 15 seconds to answer each of the following 5 questions. Now listen to the interview. First of all, when do people start work in American offices?
Right. Well, the official workday starts at 9 a.m. It should really mean 9 o'clock, not 10 past or half past 9.
Would you say that people work very hard in offices in America?
Well, I don't know about the employees in your country, but some nations have a philosophy that you only work when the boss is around. And any time he's not there, one can relax by reading the newspaper or whatever one likes doing in a personal way.
And things are different in the States, you are saying?
Well, in America, one is being paid for one's time. So employees are expected to find other work if their own desks are clear, or to help someone else with his or her work. But you never sit idle doing nothing.
Yes, as the saying goes, time is money.
Exactly. Your employer owns your time while he is paying you for it. That is precisely what time is money means. And anyway, the boss does not ask more of you than he is doing himself. He'll probably work until the lunch hour himself, or even take work until night.
Talking about lunch hours, what about them? Do you take them seriously?
Oh yes, sure, of course. The employee's lunch hours should be taken within the period allowed, unless you are officially discussing company business, say on a business lunch. It's the same, too, with the end of the day. I mean, work until the day officially ends at 5 o'clock, unless you are in the office work where flex time is accepted practice.
Oh, so you have the flex time system, do you? I wasn't sure about that.
Oh, yeah, sure. Flexible working hours, that is. Starting or ending work earlier or later. I know it's still relatively new. However, there are more and more Americans on the system today. Well, for the same reason as in Europe, to keep traffic and commuting problems down. And as more women now work, it gives more family time.
Could you say something about contract of hiring in America, please?
Well, it's different in America from, say, European countries like Germany or France. Perhaps Japan, too, I'm not sure. I know that in some countries, people relax when they have once got a job, because they know they will almost never be fired unless they do something wrong.
Do you mean that your employer can just fire you in America?
No. There are, of course, legal protections in the U.S., so employees cannot be unjustly fired without good reasons. Workers must do a good job, produce well, and get along with their colleagues, or they can be let go, as it is called.
So, one day to the next, you mean?
Well, it's really done without warning. But it is important to remember that in the U.S., you are a member of a business firm and not a family. It makes a difference.
I wonder, are the physical or external appearances of office life different from European offices?
Well, I've heard people comment on the informality found in American offices. And this is certainly a little difficult for people who are more used to a hierarchical system, of course. There are some very formal offices, too, say, big banks, law firms, and major corporations. But in many establishments with fewer employees, the atmosphere is loose and easy, with a lot of joking and teasing and wandering in and out of the offices among all levels of employees.
Well, that sounds quite interesting. I think that's all I want to know, really. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Section C, News Broadcast. Question 11 is based on the following news. At the end of the news item, you will be given 15 seconds to answer the question. Now, listen to the news. President Clinton began his three-day campaign-style trip to the western U.S. later today to highlight his domestic agenda, White House spokesman says. Crime, the most important issue for America's election year, according to the public opinion poll, will be a key theme of President Clinton's trip to California, Nevada, and New Mexico. Mr. Clinton's presumptive Republican challenger, retiring Senator Bob Dole, has repeatedly disapproved of Mr. Clinton's record on fighting crime. The president is expected to argue that his policies have helped make American communities safer places. Mr. Clinton will also attend a number of political fundraising events during his visit to California and Nevada.
Questions 12 and 13 are based on the following news. At the end of the news item, you will be given 30 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the news. Reports say Japan and U.S. have reached an agreement on a dispute over air cargo transport rights in Asia. The agreement means Washington and Tokyo will renegotiate 1952 aviation treaty, which allowed American airlines to fly on from Tokyo to other places of Asia, but didn't allow Japanese airlines the same way to fly on from American to other destinations. Tokyo has always said that the treaty was unfair, and Japan has always wanted it changed. According to the agreement, Japan will allow American Airlines carrier Federal Express to fly on through Tokyo to seven other destinations in Asia. Now Japan has always said it was happy to allow that if the treaty was renegotiated. It does seem very clear that Japan will come out of this one on top. This is certainly not the first dispute and certainly won't be the last dispute either. There are several outstanding areas of friction between Japan and the U.S. At the moment, they are negotiating about photographic film and photographic paper. It could take a year to resolve. But even where the two countries do reach an agreement, there is still room for argument. They reached the famous car agreement about a month ago. They are still bickering about it.
Questions 14 and 15 are based on the following news. At the end of the news item, you will be given 30 seconds to answer the questions. Now, listen to the news. Scientists say that they can tell what air and sea conditions were like hundreds of thousands of years ago. They say pieces of ice taken from Greenland provide such information. Scientists took the ice from more than 1.5 miles deep in huge masses of ice that float on the sea. That is the deepest scientists have ever drilled for ice. The ice represents 25,000 years of history. It provides one of the clearest records of ancient weather. European and American scientific teams have been studying ice from the same area to confirm each other's findings. The scientists examined the ice that was formed each year. They measured the oxygen and carbon dioxide in the ice. These measurements tell about the year's temperature. From these measurements, the scientific teams say the past 10,000 years is the only period during which the weather has not changed very much. Before that time, they believe very large and sudden changes in the weather were common. The ice appears to show that at some periods, Earth's weather changed from very hot to very cold in only 10 years.
Section D, Note-Taking and Gap-Filling. In this section, you will hear a mini-lecture. You will hear the lecture once only. While listening to the lecture, take notes on the important points. Your notes will not be marked, but you will need them to complete a 15-minute gap-filling task on the answer sheet after the mini-lecture. Use the blank sheet for note-taking. Now listen to the mini-lecture. It is common nowadays for companies and industries to sponsor big sports events. For example, many companies sponsored the 8th National Games held in Shanghai in 1997. Then what exactly do companies and industries get out of sponsoring big sports events such as the International Games? And why do they do so? There is an obvious answer and a not-so-obvious one. The obvious answer is that they get known worldwide, particularly if they are the principal sponsor of an event. This is especially important when considering the number of countries around the world that might show the event on TV. The not-so-obvious answer is that sponsorship can help them to save money. But how can they save money in this way? Companies can claim expenditures on sponsorship or support sports or arts against the amount of tax they owe. So if they are going to have to pay tax anyway, why not spend the money on promoting the name of a product? However, sponsorship is surely a very expensive business. So how does one decide on which events or activities to support? Companies spend a lot of time making sure that they have the perfect match between a product to be represented and an activity that needs sponsorship. Basically, companies have to make sure that the image is right and the product gets maximum coverage through the event. I mean, you wouldn't expect a company whose product has a young and national image to sponsor a sport that is following among older people. There are certain reasons behind sponsorship. That's what the game is all about for those who try to sell it. There are some important points to consider before going to sponsor an event. First and foremost, I suppose, is the popularity of the event. In global terms, I mean. Events like the World Cup and the Olympics have businesses queuing up to offer sponsorship. There are the big media events, hours and hours of TV and satellite coverage guaranteed all over the world, as well as press coverage and the possibility of photographs that in some way advertise your product. Most events aren't quite like that, though. I suppose you got the national games every 4 years in China, but most events appeared to be only limited to proportion of potential audience. Tennis, for example. Most of the audience there are young, so products for the young are the ones that you would associate with the event. Then how do you match the product with the event? The most important thing with a small event is to identify the audience it's going to appeal to. In this instance, tennis and young people that should attract drink manufacturers, sports fashion designers, cosmetic products, and so on. Then you would have potential coverage of media. It is a sort of event that might attract Coca-Cola or Pepsi, maybe, even McDonald's. In sponsoring sports events, it is not just the media coverage that matters. The important question is whether the people who have either been to the event or read about it in the press would be more likely to buy a product as a result. A lot of advantages in investment in sponsorship are longer term. People who possibly read about it and watch that an event on TV may not even be able to tell you who were sponsoring the event. Yet, they will act favorably if asked to comment on the product marketed by the sponsoring company. There have been conditions in some way. Conditioning the mind is what advertising is about. Believe it or not, straight advertising is a far more expensive way of promoting your image than sponsorship. And what's more, sponsorship is mostly tax-free. To sum up, today we have talked about sponsorship of sports events by companies, the reasons behind, and a few related points. I hope it can help you gain some insight into the issue.
Now you have 2 minutes to check your notes, and then please complete the 15-minute gap-filling task on the answer sheet. This is the end of listening comprehension. Test for English Majors, 2000, Grade 8, Paper 1, Part 1, Listening Comprehension. In sections A, B, and C, you will hear everything once only. Listen carefully and then answer the questions that follow. Section A, Talk. Questions 1 to 5 refer to the talk in this section. At the end of the talk, you will be given 15 seconds to answer each of the following 5 questions. Now, listen to the talk. The earliest libraries existed thousands of years ago in China and Egypt, where collections of records on tablets of baked clay were kept in temples and royal palaces. In the Western world, libraries were first established in ancient Greece. For example, Aristotle once had a research library in the 3rd century BC. The first library in the United States was a private library, which could be used only by authorized readers. In 1633, John Harvard gave money and more than 300 books to a newly established college in Massachusetts. In return for his generosity, the legislature voted that the school be named Harvard College. The librarian there set the rules for the new library. Only college students and faculty members could use the books. No book could be lent for more than 1 month. The earliest public library was established in Philadelphia in 1731. Although this library was open to everyone, all readers had to pay a membership or subscription fee in order to borrow books. Very few subscription libraries exist today. Some book and stationery stores maintain small rental libraries where everyone may borrow a book for a daily charge. The first truly free public library that circulated books to everyone at no cost was started in a small New England town in 1833. Today, there are more than 7,000 free public libraries throughout the U.S. They contain about 160 million books, which are circulated to over 52 million readers. Historically, the major purpose of free public libraries was educational. They were expected to provide adults with the opportunity to continue their education after they left school. So the function of a public library was once described as lesser reservoir than a fountain. In other words, emphasis was to be placed on wide circulation rather than on collecting and storing books. Over the years, public library services have greatly expanded. In addition to their continuing and important educational role, public libraries provide culture and recreation, comfort, are trying to fill many changing community needs. Many libraries offer browsing rooms where readers can relax on the vinyl chairs and read current newspapers and magazines. Attract also circulate music records. Library programs, films, lectures, reading clubs, and concerts also technical information library users. In addition to books, rec, and periodicals and reference material, libraries provide tech library in the such as books and pamphlets on gardening, carpentry. It was originally planned as a reference library. The largest public today, in addition to that important function, serves as a reference for the public and sends out many books to libraries on an library loan system. Unlike free public libraries, which are open to everyone, private libraries can be used only by authorized readers. Many industrial and scientific organizations and business firms have collections of books, journals, and research data for their staffs. Several private historical associations have research collections of special interest to their members. In addition, many elementary and secondary schools operate libraries for use by students and teachers. Prisons and hospitals maintain libraries too. The largest and most important private libraries are operated by colleges and universities and are used by students, faculty members, and occasionally by visiting scholars. Many universities have special libraries for research in particular fields such as law, medicine, and education. Recent surveys report that more than 300 million books are available in these academic libraries, and they are regularly used by over 8 million students.
Section B, Interview. Questions 6 to 10 are based on an interview. At the end of the interview, you will be given 15 seconds to answer each of the following questions. Now listen to the interview.
Hello, Nancy. I know you are one of the few women taxi drivers in the city now, and you drive for a living. What made you want to become a taxi driver in the first place?
I took pride in driving well even when I was young, for I had to wait until I had a car to learn to drive. When I finally learned, it was something I really enjoyed, and still enjoy. I remember how smart those taxi drivers had seemed, driving so well, and dressed so neatly in their uniforms, and I thought, I'd like to do that myself.
You really enjoy driving, I see. And how long have you been a taxi driver?
Altogether 12 years.
It's been quite some time already, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Then, what did you find the most difficult about becoming a taxi driver?
I can still remember when I was learning to drive, it was scary. I did not yet know how to judge distance, and when a truck came near, it seemed like its wheels would just come right over me. Anyway, soon I learned to judge distance. I began looking ahead, stopped worrying about the trucks, and about what was moving on either side.
In your opinion, what does it take to become a good taxi driver?
Besides driving well, the most important thing a taxi driver needs to know is the streets, and I knew the city well because I'd lived there for a long time. I knew all the main streets and even the side streets. And, of course, you have to keep updating your knowledge of the streets because the city changes. There might be a new road appearing somewhere one day.
What about annual leaves? Do you have them?
Oh, yes. When I first started, I had only 10 days, and now I have 3 weeks every year with pay.
And just out of curiosity, when you go on vacation to another place or city, do you drive there as well?
In most cases, not. I prefer to be driven by others if we go by car. I would also prefer to go by train or plane if there is a choice. I've already had too much driving in my life. So when on holiday, I just want to relax.
I see. Well, let's come back to your work. Are there any unpleasant aspects in your job?
The only serious difficulty with this work is that sometimes it's dangerous to drive at night. But you have a choice, and I always choose to work days rather than nights.
And then what's the best part of your job?
I soon found that what I liked the best about this job was being outdoors, seeing how the city changes from season to season, and there are places I've seen that I would probably never have seen in another job. And I love all kinds of weather. I'd like to leave the window down on a fine rain. And when I have a long drive near the end of the day, I sometimes go past my home to tell my two little children that I'll be home soon, and they always want to come along in my car.
Oh, do they? I guess kids all like to be taken for a ride sometimes.
Yeah, but you cannot take anyone along unless they pay, or you pay for them. So I've got to pay their fares one of these days and take them out in my taxi, because they really think it's fun. Out in the countryside on a long drive with the fresh air and sun shining, you just seem to want to drive forever. At least that's how it is for me.
Being a taxi driver, you have to meet all kinds of people. How do you feel about that?
I enjoy meeting many different people. I might not have met some if not for this job, and I've learned a lot about how people behave in these years.
Can you tell us a little bit more about it?
The biggest advantage is that you come across various characters in your work. Some people are interesting, some rushed, some pleasant, some funny, some talkative. Some are so pressed for time that they change their clothes in the taxi. Those in the greatest rush would sometimes forget to pay.
Have you ever met someone who doesn't like women drivers?
Yes. Once a passenger really objected to having a woman driver, and I laughed at him so much he stopped his fussing. Although there has been one or two cases like this, I think most people are nice to women drivers. So this is really an interesting part of my work.
Now, my last question. Have you ever thought of changing the job?
Not yet. I might in a few years' time, but not at this moment, because I really enjoy my work, and I do get a lot of satisfaction out of it. So why would I?
Okay. Our interview's coming to an end. I'd like to wind up our interview by wishing you good luck. Thank you very much for your time, Nancy.
A pleasure.
Section C. News Broadcast. Question 11 is based on the following news. At the end of the news item, you will be given 15 seconds to answer the question. Now, listen to the news. President Clinton has renewed his attacks on the American tobacco industry, accusing it of using delaying tactics to block anti-smoking legislation. U.S. Congress is considering a bill which would place tight restrictions on tobacco advertising and impose penalties on tobacco companies if they continued to sell cigarettes to children. Mr. Clinton said it was a fight with the lives of American children, and he urged Congress to move ahead with the bill. But a spokesman for one of the big tobacco companies called the legislation totally unreasonable, and he said the process had become wholly politicized.
Questions 12 and 13 are based on the following news. At the end of the news item, you will be given 30 seconds to answer the questions. Now listen to the news. The French President Jacques Chirac is to discuss the efforts to stimulate the Japanese economy during a visit to Japan, which begins today. The French president is no stranger to Japan. He's visited the country 40 times before, and this will be his second visit as president. Mr. Chirac will hold summit talks with the Japanese Prime Minister next Monday. He's expected to discuss efforts to boost the Japanese economy, as well as investments by Japanese companies in France. He'll also meet the Emperor and Empress at Longshore Tuesday. But perhaps the event that will draw most attention is the launch of a year-long festival of French arts and culture in Japan. A replica of the Arc de Triomphe that usually stands in Paris has been transported to Tokyo Bay for the festival, and Mr. Chirac will unveil it. The festival includes films, theatrical performances, dance, and exhibitions, as well as promotions for French food and wine, both of which are very popular in Japan.
Questions 14 and 15 are based on the following news.
At the end of the news item, you will be given 30 seconds to answer the question. Now, listen to the news. Officials of the World Food Program, WFP, said they are receiving information that famine has gripped parts of central Afghanistan. WFP officials say as the winter snow begins to melt and high mountain paths begin to clear, the local leaders and international aid workers are reporting some people are dying of starvation. Officials say a major disaster affecting hundreds of thousands of people may be in the making. The Taliban are blocking food deliveries to central Afghanistan. The UN has warned for several months that more than 1 million people are suffering from the blockade and 160,000 face starvation. An emergency airlift of food to central provinces was canceled earlier this year when the Taliban bombed the local airport. WFP officials say existing food stocks in that area are exhausted, and an emergency effort will be launched to bring wheat and potatoes into the area.
Section D, Note-Taking and Gap-Filling. In this section, you will hear a mini-lecture. You will hear the lecture once only. While listening to the lecture, take notes on the important points. Your notes will not be marked, but you will need them to complete a 15-minute gap-filling task on the answer sheet after the mini-lecture. Use the blank sheet for note-taking. Now listen to the mini-lecture. Good morning. Today I'd like to discuss with you the secrets of good conversation, that is, how to talk to anyone, anytime, anywhere. When someone tells you that you have to give a speech, your response may be, I've got to do what? But it's important to remember the speech is like anything else in life. There's always a first time. People, even those who are wonderful talkers in a conversational setting, are often terrified over the prospect of giving their first speech. Some are scared about it no matter how many speeches they have given before. I suspect you may have the same experience or have seen others in similar situations. I give speeches many times a year to groups of every possible description. My secret is simply that I think public speaking is no different from any other form of talk. It's a way of sharing my thoughts with other people. You know, in one sense, it's actually easier than social conversation because you are in complete control of where the talk is going. At the same time, you have to have something to say, of course. This leads us to the first key of becoming a successful public speaker. Talk about something you know about. The second key to being a good speaker is to follow the motto of the Boy Scouts, be well prepared. Never go to a speech without some prior work on it. If you are talking about the subject you know well, as I just advised, preparing the speech itself should not be too difficult. If you let the audience know where you are going at the beginning, they will follow you more easily through the body of your speech. At the end of your speech, try to summarize your most important points in slightly different words from the ones you used in your opening. Here are some other key tips based on my own speaking experience and what I have noticed in other good speakers. Look at your audience. I've already said how important it is to make eye contact. First, be sure to look up from your text or notes. Second, don't talk to the wall in the back or to the window or to the side. They are not the audience. Each time you look up from your text, look at a different part of the audience so the whole group feels they are being addressed. Know the pacing and the inflection you want to use in speech. Some speakers, if they are reading from a complete text, underline the words they want to emphasize. If you are using an outline or notes, highlight ideas or phrases you should stress in your speech with a different colored pen or something. This accomplishes two things. It guarantees that your emphasis will be where you intend it to be, and it assures your audience that you won't be speaking in a dull monotone that will put them to sleep, especially if you are talking after a heavy meal. Stand up straight. I don't mean that you have to assume a parade ground posture, but stand in a comfortable, natural way rather than hunching over the lectern. Hunching can constrict your breathing, and it can make you look bad as well. If there's a microphone in front of you, adjust it to the right height rather than forcing yourself to stoop during the speech. If you can, check this out before it's your turn to speak. Talk normally into the microphone. If you speak at a high volume into it, you'll actually be hard to hear. And be careful to keep your mouth in range of the mic. Don't weave around or turn away to answer a question from the side. Last but not the least, a speaker has to keep in mind the value of brevity. It's not easy to be brief, especially on the topic you know a lot about. But in any kind of communication, it's always worth taking the time to boil your message down to its essentials.
That emphasis on brevity applies even more when you are delivering a speech. The shrewd business expressions, know when to get off, come to play again, and the best public speakers always know when. Some of the longest speeches ever inflicted on the American public have been inaugural addresses of our presidents. However, one of the shortest inaugural addresses is also one of the best remembered and most often quoted. It was delivered on January 20, 1960, by John F. Kennedy. Kennedy spoke for less than 15 minutes. We can learn from these speakers whose ability to talk effectively were essential to their success, as is the case with so many successful people in every profession. Brevity is the first thing we can learn from them. If people like Kennedy are willing to keep it short to maximize their effectiveness as speakers, we should be smart enough to do the same thing. To sum up, I've mentioned several key points in becoming a successful public speaker, such as good preparation, audience awareness, brevity, etc. I hope you'll find them very useful in making your speeches effective. Thank you. Now you have 2 minutes to check your notes. And then please complete the 15-minute gap-filling task on the answer sheet. This is the end of the listening comprehension.